Why does the World Trade Organization only allow tariffs to be imposed on importers?
Well, that's quite a question, Sean, because just that one sentence, and as a law academic, I could spend quite a bit of time pulling apart all of the words in that sentence, because if we start looking at the word tariffs, that in itself requires negotiation between the members. And anybody familiar with the World Trade Organization would be aware that negotiations can sometimes take years and often results in a stalemate. So it's a difficult thing to negotiate on tariffs, but there are some things that are actually allowed in accordance with the World Trade Organization rules. And that's precisely what the EU is looking at doing with this border adjustment. It's not necessarily a tariff. When you consider the conversation article that I put out recently, the word tariffs was used. But until we see the legislation, I would be guessing that it's not actually going to be a tariff. It's going to be considered an internal measure, and some of those are allowed in certain circumstances.
What's the kind of relationship between this carbon tax, tariff, whatever it might be, coming through the European Union? What kind of relationship does it have with the net zero emissions target as part of the Paris Agreement?
That's a brilliant question. Well, first off, they've referred to it as a carbon border adjustment mechanism, or a CBAM. I haven't heard anybody refer to it as a CBAM, but they've certainly used that acronym. And the idea is, from what I've heard, they need to do more in the EU in order to achieve this net zero target. And they're saying they need to transform their entire economy in order to achieve that. And this means addressing carbon leakage in a more meaningful way. So carbon leakage, you know, it occurs when there's stringent measures imposed in one jurisdiction, and as a result, people start looking to other jurisdictions to either do their manufacturing elsewhere or potentially buy products that are cheaper from elsewhere because they don't have the same stringency in the manufacturing. So that's where carbon leakage can occur, and as we know, carbon science suggests that it doesn't matter where the greenhouse gases are released. If they're rising in one area and decreasing in the other, then we haven't solved the problem. So the suggestion is, in order to transform their economy more meaningfully, they need to introduce something that's going to mean that any imported products are subject to the same stringent requirements, and that's what the carbon border adjustment mechanism will do. They've also expressed concerns that the rest of the world isn't necessarily putting their hands up to go with the targets quite as strict as their net zero target by 2050, although some actually have. They're saying that until more meaningful action takes place in other jurisdictions, then they need to take this unilateral action.
In terms of what the rest of the world is doing, have we seen these kinds of systems implemented anywhere else previously?
Well, there's definitely other emissions trading schemes that have been introduced in different parts of the world, none as large as the EU's emissions trading system. And obviously that one was the first one that was introduced to address greenhouse gas emissions. It certainly wasn't the first thing to be imposed on carbon. There were carbon taxes prior to that, but this has been the first and the largest system introduced. But other parts of the world have also done things. Certainly, China's been talking about introducing a nationwide emissions trading scheme. They did have some pilots, back several years ago, back from, I believe the first one was in 2013. And so they've had some pilot programs. And at this point, they've made a commitment to achieve net zero emissions by 2060. But of course, those commitments aren't necessarily binding. So it's all about the actions that are actually taken. So other countries that have done things, South Korea, for instance, has got an emissions trading scheme, quite a large one. And I think it's the second largest outside of the EU's emissions trading scheme. There's also regional schemes in different parts of the world. But obviously, the most notable is the EU ETS.
And just in terms of the implications for us here in Australia, I mean, what are the kind of the trade and, I guess, carbon emission implications for Australia in trading with the European Union if this one is all found to be legitimate, all found to be a system that kind of works?
Yeah, I'm glad you put that on the end of the sentence, because there is a lot of ifs, ands or buts about it. And obviously we don't have legislation out of the EU yet. They're suggesting that this will be drafted by the middle of the year. And I dare say that will be heavily scrutinised to see if it does fit within the scope of the rules of the WTO. The implications for Australia, I'm not an expert in, you know, different trade that goes on with the EU, but I believe they're not one of our largest trading partners. So some would say that this may not be as significant as if it was introduced somewhere such as Japan, who has also talked about introducing a similar measure. If it is introduced and it's seen to be in compliance with World Trade Organization rules, then it may mean that anybody importing, exporting products to those jurisdictions, they're going to have to pay a carbon price that's equivalent to what is paid by the by those within that area. So a price equivalent to the EU ETS, at the moment that price is quite high, so it could be significant for anybody that does export products to the EU. Unless, of course, there's a carbon price that's introduced equivalent in Australia, but we've seen quite a history of that occurring here, and I dare say we're a long way off that being reintroduced.
Well, Felicity, do appreciate you giving us a bit of insight into this one this morning.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Sean. It's been great to talk to you.